Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to talk about AutoTest, which is the testing framework being used by the Linux kernel itself, and a whole lot of other things. You're going to want to see this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch. Episode 200, recorded February 1st, 2012. AutoTest. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the big projects, the small projects, the movers, the shakers, projects you probably haven't heard anything about, projects you may have heard a lot about, but we're trying to get them all on here one at a time, one each week, just to give you a little taste of what's in the open-source software world. I am back again in a slightly different room from the giant echoey room that I was in last week, but it's got its own flaws and that there's actually no table in the room. So if I look a little tall, it's because I'm sitting on a couch looking over a footrest. So that's just my new position for now. We'll try to get that fixed by next week, but I'm still at Media Temple, of course. They're providing great space for this. But let me go ahead and bring on my co-host, Dan. Welcome back to the show, Dan Lynch.
No, it's great to be back. And it's nice to be in color this time. Last time I was on a couple of weeks ago, we had the black and white film noir effect going on for the SOPA protest. So it's nice to be in color. You can now see my wonderful, slightly dull gray T-shirt. But I should have worn like a Hawaiian shirt or something to celebrate the fact that we're back in color.
Oh, there you, hey, whatever works for you, that's fine. I just got to point out, for those of you that are into numerology, this is show number 200. Yay! Mm. So we decided we're just going to do a clips show. We're not going to, I canceled my guests, and we're just going to do little snippets of the best of 200. No, just kidding. We actually have guests coming up. But I also wanted to notice that it's not only show 200, but we're taping this on February 1, 2012, which to me is 2-1-2012. For you, it's 1-2-2012, right, mm-hmm. Dan, because you do it backwards? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Look, think of the zeros and ones and twos in that. That's just, numerologically, this is insane that show 200 happened to fall on this kind of a numeric day. I'm stunned. What do you think, Dan? Is that just crazy?
Yeah, we should work out what that is in binary. We should try and work that out. But it does seem to be some strange kind of convergence going on here. Maybe it's the sign.
And there are no twos in binary.
Oh, fair play. Yeah, sorry. I was thinking of the zeros and ones.
Oh, go the other way.
I've invented a new kind of binary that actually involves three numbers.
Our machine is so powerful, the binary goes all the way to two.
Exactly.
Well, great. So the show's not just about us laughing and giggling at ourselves. We have a great couple of guests on today. So we have a pair of people on for our 200th show. That sounds appropriate. Two people coming on. We have, I hope I pronounce his name right here, Lucas Manego Rodriguez and Kleba Rosa, who are both have a Red Hat address. So I presume they're both working for Red Hat of some kind. But they're going to talk to us about the AutoTest project. The AutoTest project is from what I can understand, is a testing framework that is being used to test things like the Linux kernel. I think that's actually where it started. And other things like KVM and I believe Chrome and a bunch of other stuff. So it's being used as sort of the testing framework. And a testing framework is some way so you can run a bunch of tests and then summarize what broke, what kept working, and so on. So it sounds great. I mean, I'm really familiar with testing from the Perl environment. So I got to ask about how this relates to the stuff I know about Perl. So it sounds like a great project. Have you looked into this at all, Dan?
Yeah, I've been doing some reading up on it recently. Actually, I read the white paper that they've put out there, and testing, I think, is much like documentation. It's something that a lot of developers kind of don't enjoy doing, so they kind of move away from it. But much like documentation, it's really important. So it's great to see the guys are working on this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. Especially anything that gets testing to be easier is something mm-hmm. that I would really appreciate because people just don't do enough testing. You know, it's like you said, it's one of those things that's sort of ignored, and it does require also a different mindset, and that's the big problem too. Documentation and testing are both very different brains from programming, and so it's mm-hmm. often hard to get somebody who's doing the programming to realize
the need for doing good testing and stuff. So it should be a great show. Looking forward to it. But before we bring our guests on, I have one very important announcement, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Netflix streams thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, which means you save time, money, and hassle. There are several easy ways to instantly access streaming movies and TV shows with Netflix. You can watch Netflix movies and TV shows on your Mac or PC or iPad. I actually watched it on my Mac in my hotel room, was watching it last night. You can watch on your iPhone and some Android phones too. And I have the iPhone app, and I love that, being able to watch portably when I'm sitting at a bus stop or something. And if you have a gaming console, an Xbox 360, a PS3, or a Nintendo Wii, you can watch Netflix right on your TV. I have my PS3 hooked up in Portland, right directly to my big screen TV. Looks beautiful. And if you're not a gamer, you can watch Netflix on your TV with an Apple TV box or a Roku box. They're inexpensive and easy to use. I also have the Roku box, Roku HD, and again, looks beautiful with Netflix. Great interface and everything. And you can begin watching a movie or show on one device and then finish on a different one. And with Netflix, you can watch movies and TV shows instantly using any of those devices. Whichever way you choose to access Netflix, you can watch as many movies and TV shows as you want, anytime you want, and you can cancel anytime. So try Netflix today for 30 days free. Go to netflix.com/twit. That's T-W-I-T. Be sure to use this URL when you sign up for your free trial, netflix.com/twit, so that they know that we sent them to you. No, we know that they sent, we sent you to them. There we go. We thank Netflix for their support of Twit, and we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guests. So let's first welcome Lucas Menegal Rodriguez to the show. Welcome, Lucas.
Hi, guys.
Hey, nice great.
Should,
so where?
Nice to be here.
Yeah, so where are you speaking to us from?
Well, I'm speaking from Brazil. It's a city near São Paulo.
Okay, cool. Well, you sound really like close by for being so far away. We also have on the show Kleba Rosa. Kleba, welcome to the show.
Hello, guys. Great to be here as well.
Yeah, and I understand you're not in the same city as Lucas, so where are you?
I'm actually, right now, I'm in Goiânia, which it's probably better known for being closer to the capital, which is Brasilia.
Ah, yes, yes. I've been to Brasilia only for about 2 hours in the airport, so I haven't gotten out of the airport yet to see the rest of the city. I imagine it's pretty beautiful, so from what I've been seeing on the pictures and stuff, so very cool. Well, let's start with Lucas. Lucas, what's your role with the project?
Well, I am the current maintainer for the project.
Mm-hmm. And so I gave a pretty rough explanation of what I thought AutoTest was at the beginning of the show, but why don't you fill us in? What problem is AutoTest solving?
Well, AutoTest is solving a lot of problems in automated testing. I mean, test itself, it's a lot of work, and you need a lot of tools to make sure that this test gets carried on in a consistent and predictable schedule. It saves a lot of work, and you have the computers doing what they can do best, which is execute instructions very fast, and then humans can do what they do best, which is analyzing the results and solving the bugs.
Let's talk a little bit about why test. What's the purpose of testing? I mean, why don't we just have the code, make sure it compiles, and send it out?
Well, because, computers are pretty good at doing what we tell them to do. Uh-huh. Now, if you have said to the computer, the right thing is the biggest problem. Mm-hmm. And we're pretty good at coming up with logic to solve problems, but we're not always perfect. And software, every non-trivial software has a lot of bugs. And well, those bugs are going to bite you in the ass sooner or later if you don't do rigorous testing. I'm not saying that test can catch up all the bugs in a software, but it can help a lot in keeping the code base high quality. Testing is very important to do that. It's actually pretty critical to any consumer facing software and any other software.
So I have a piece of software, and I want to make sure it's working correctly. So one way to test it would be to just simply, you know, type at the screen and do all the other stuff that, you know, to kind of simulate being a user for a while. But, you know, that doesn't scale well. For one thing, I might not type the same thing the next time I try the application out. And I'll probably get bored after about 20 minutes of typing and trying to go through all the things. So how does automated testing work, and how does it help the situation?
Well, automated testing can do all that boring stuff that that you would do manually, which is usually a pain, and in a very reliable and consistent way. Computers can perform the same set of instructions exactly the same. Doesn't matter if it's during the night, during the day, it always carries on all the instructions correctly. So it actually helps a lot in improving the quality and the reliability and the consistency of testing. Of course, automated testing can't cover 100% of testing need of a given project, but well, we can get pretty close to, let's say, 80 to 90% of all testing needs of a given project. So automated testing helps a lot in making sure that we are always doing things the same way, which also helps us to reproduce issues.
Cool. Clever. Just want a question, a couple questions for you for now. So what's your role with the project?
I've been working with Autotest for the last year and a half or so, maybe a little bit less. And myself and Lucas, we spend quite a lot of time on the virtualization part of Autotest. So Autotest itself is a framework for testing, but it has a large subset of itself, which is targeted to testing virtualization technologies. Today, we test the KVM hypervisor in a very broad scope, and we also test other technologies through libvirt, which is a generic abstraction layer for testing various others. Virtualization technologies. So we kind of jump between improving Autotest itself, because it's something that we leverage, something that we use, and also improving the virtualization testing, which is the test that we use the most.
It must be kind of difficult to do that kind of testing, because you've got so many moving parts at the same time trying to figure out. You know, I suppose it's worse in debugging it. I mean, I suppose testing can easily reveal that something's wrong, and debugging is going to be difficult for that. But what's it like setting up tests for a virtualization environment?
Well, you're right that it's not trivial at all. We actually have to deal with different host distributions. So we target various Linux distributions as hosts themselves. Mm-hmm. We also support building the kernel right from the Git repo so that we can actually test the KVM component that's in the kernel at the very latest version. We also have to build various userland components. And after that, we have to test various guests. So you're right. It's a lot of, there are a lot of moving parts. And that's why Autotest has some complexity added to it, but it's right and necessary to have it, because we are testing not a single piece of software but a whole stack. It's quite complex.
Wow! And Lucas, first, just back for you for a second. What's the history of the project? When did it start? And how did you get involved?
Well. Autotest started long ago, around 2004, I think, when the guys at IBM Linux Technology Center started writing a set of test automation tools that later was known as ABAT. It stands for Automated Build and Test. And they had this internal program at IBM Linux Technology Center used to do quality control of kernel and distros. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was kind of messy because they started writing the project in a very ad hoc way, which means they were mixing up shell script, Perl, PHP. And at some point, they realized it was kind of a mess. And then they joined together and said, okay, let's rewrite this thing in a single language, or at least the most possible code written in a single language. Then they have created the Autotest client, So they have chosen Python, not because it's a perfect language, but it was pretty good for what they wanted to do. It was better to maintain the code. So they have released what we know today as the Autotest client. Later on, they have realized that they could improve the stack, and because Autotest was a pretty much end-to-end test system. It still exists, but they never published it upstream because it was sort of a mess. So they didn't want to go through all the steps necessary to release it. So they decided to re-implement all the pieces of it from scratch. So they developed the Autotest client. And later on, Martin Blight, which was the first Autotest maintainer, moved out to Google. And inside Google, Martin assembled a team of other programmers, and they started writing the other parts of the stack, which is the remote client part, the Autotest scheduler, the command line interfaces, the RPC server. I joined the project in early 2007 when I was working for IBM Linux Technology Center as well. And the situation in the very beginning was sort of a mess because people didn't have a lot of quality principles used to develop their own tests. It was just a pile of shell scripts, a pile of messy shell scripts. And when I joined the team, I wanted to do something better. So I researched, I found Autotest, and then I pushed my team to port all the tests that we had to the Autotest framework. And well, the effort paid out really well. Tests now are easier to maintain. They are better to write. They are easier to write, actually, and better to maintain. So, and also we have improved a lot the whole quality of our test set. Later on, Red Hat needed people to maintain the set of KVM tests. Then I was hired by Red Hat, and currently I maintain the KVM tests, and they are all written in top of Autotest. So that's sort of the story that we have so far. At some point, Martin Blight started working on another company and stepped back. And since I was a contributor since early 2007, I became the new maintainer for the project.
Hmm. Now, I noticed, Lucas, that you mentioned the IBM Linux Tech Center there. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because it's a body that I've heard quite a bit about before. So how many people are involved and what kind of things do they get up to?
Well, last time I checked, IBM LTC has about 600 people working on it. It's a fairly sizable engineering department inside of IBM that, the idea is to develop tools on top of the Linux platform and help to develop the open source ecosystem. For example, the maintainer of QEMU is a guy that works at IBM Linux Technology Center. And in Brazil, we have about 60 engineers working in there.
Hmm. Excellent. And we've got a question from the IRC that's just popped up, actually. I'm going to throw this one to Kleber because I don't want you to feel too left out. We've got Vishnal009 says, where is a good place for me to start learning about testing? I've never done any kind of testing before. Do you have any advice or tips on that?
Sorry.
I did say I would throw that to Kleber. Yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
I'll just say something, and if Lucas wants to compliment later, please do, Lucas. When it comes to Autotest itself, we do have some quite good documentation that is now hosted on the GitHub, on our GitHub page. And you probably want to go to the client part. Autotest, as Lucas said, has two kind of main use cases. The first one is when you test a piece of software running on your local machine, and that's what we call client mode. And there's also another kind of use case where you have a server that dispatches tests to other hosts, and that we call server mode. So you probably want to start with client mode, and you want to go to the client tests directory inside Autotest. And from there, you're going to see lots of different test suites. And you're going to see that there's a control file, which is the point that actually it's the entry point for the test itself that is going to actually run the test suite. So when it comes to Autotest, that's the very, very quick introduction to how you can actually run a test and start testing your system. Lucas, if you want to give a more broad overview about software testing, please go ahead.
Well, for software testing, we have, if you mean online documentation, I would say that the Wikipedia page for software testing is pretty good. It contains a lot of the principles involved in testing in general. And if you're interested in joining, let's say, your distribution QA team, every major distribution has a very good and active QA team. For example, the Fedora folks are a very nice quality assurance team. And you can look at their wikis. They have all the steps that you need to become a software tester. So it's important to keep in mind that we have two modes of testing, which is one is manual testing. Like I said, it is kind of impossible to get rid of 100% of the manual testing. So you if you are on a QA team, you will do some manual testing anyway. But we try to focus on automated testing, which is trying to resolve 80 to 90% of the testing needs of a project. So if you join a QA team of a distribution, say you use Ubuntu, you can talk to the Ubuntu QA folks, and Fedora, you can talk to the Fedora QA guys. And they have a very rich and good documentation on how to do it, on how to start with testing on your favorite Linux distribution.
I'm really familiar with the Perl testing framework because I grew up with Perl, and I've written a lot about it for my books and courses, and I use it every day at my day job here. Part of what I know about the Perl testing is that there's essentially a testing harness that's running, and then there's some interface between that and the thing being tested, and the thing being tested has to, in this case, output a certain protocol called the TAP protocol to say things are good or things are bad, and the harness is summarizing that and launching the next thing and so on. How does that differ from Autotest, or is it similar?
Well, it is similar. Autotest can output TAP as well. Autotest can output TAP. And, well, let's say you are testing a given piece of software and you want to get started with Autotest, but you don't want to write a whole lot of Autotest code. You just want your test suite to execute under Autotest. Autotest has a very simple wrapper system. All you have to do is to write a few lines of Python code that will call your test suite. And then your test suite will report results to Autotest, and Autotest will then report results back to you. So Autotest is a broader test harness, and that test harness can execute any user space command that you would wish, such as the entry point of your test suite. So it's not different. If your test suite speaks TAP, we will be able to parse the results and then report back to the user. So one thing that we care a lot about is to make sure that the other people's test suites can integrate very easily into Autotest. So yeah, it's not that different. It's pretty much the same idea. Only that AutoTest is on a higher level of harness, is a higher level of harness for your tests.
So if I had some existing Perl tests that generate TAP, I could run this under AutoTest instead of under Perl's test wrapper then.
Exactly. Exactly. You will write up, let's say, a handful of lines of Python code telling AutoTest to uncompress the tarball with your test suit, mm-hmm. execute the main entry point for your test. Then AutoTest would handle all the parsing of the results. Of course, if you are not outputting TAP, if you output some plain text format, then you would have to teach AutoTest how to interpret the results of mm-hmm. your test suit. But other than that, it shouldn't be a lot of work. If you have a simple test suit, it should be trivial to write AutoTest wrapper code for your test suit.
So, are there a lot of other interfaces besides TAP that it understands?
No. Currently, we have some patches that we are reviewing from mm-hmm. from Clever that have the TAP library. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you would have to teach AutoTest how to understand results. So most test wrappers for test suits that do not speak TAP, they have their own format. They do their own thing. And you just tell AutoTest, okay, if you find this pattern on the application log, then it's a failure. Of course, AutoTest will still honor the exit code of your test suit's entry code. So if your entry code returns a return code different than zero, AutoTest will be able to detect it and say, okay, the test failed. But if you want more fine-grained control over what AutoTest will understand from your test suit's output, then you will have to write the logic in Python.
So the test could be as simple as grep-c looking for a pattern then, because that'll exit status good or bad depending on whether a data is found, right?
Yes.
Yes, very
it's,
good.
It's very straightforward. You can write a very simple test in shell script and make AutoTest call it, and it will be just fine.
So what's the scope of the stuff that's currently being tested by AutoTest in terms of command line programs, web applications, JavaScript stuff, KVM, all that? Is it being used for all this?
Yeah, it pretty much depends on what people want to use AutoTest for. It's currently pretty good and pretty complete when it comes to do kernel testing, because for AutoTest was developed to test kernel, so it mm-hmm. has a lot of features to test kernel. But if you want to test the user space, it will do it just as fine. So currently, we have a lot of fairly large projects using it. One of them is KVM. We work for KVM. Our daily jobs at Red Hat is work on the KVM team. But we have the Chrome OS folks use AutoTest to do their quality assurance. I remember Google has an internal Ubuntu distribution, and they use AutoTest extensively to test that internal distribution. Well, I don't recall exactly other users. I'm sure there are other users, but I probably forgot. But it's possible to do all that. But I understand that a lot of those user space projects are using BuildBot and Jenkins nowadays. AutoTest can do most of the stuff that BuildBot and Jenkins can do, but is more targeted towards the kernel. But it, like I said, it can do both kernel and user space testing. And we have a fair number of projects using it. And I got emails from people pretty much every week asking me about AutoTest, and they want to use AutoTest. So you can use AutoTest to test file systems, network stacks, virtualization. It's pretty complete. It's a pretty complete test framework. Of course, you still have to write your own tests, but for all the other instrumentation Autotest is there to help you.
Great. Kleber, just to turn it over to you for a bit, what happens once Autotest notices there's a failure? There, obviously, this has to go somewhere or be noticed by somebody for anybody to act on it. What's the process from there? What kind of interface is going in that direction do you have?
If we're talking about the simplest use case, which is the client mode of Autotest, then it's just going to log that. So it uses a structured directory and file format, and it's going to just log the failure and capture the reason of the failure. Nowadays, whenever a test finishes running, we generate an HTML report, so you can quickly open that up in your browser and see what failures you had and what the success you had out of your test. There's also another condition, which is when a test is could not be run because of a previous failure or some dependency that was missing. So that is also marked that way. So if you're using client mode, that's the way to take a look at it. And if you're using server mode and you're dispatching tests to a bunch of machines, and we know of users that use Autotest to send tests to hundreds and maybe even thousands of machines at a time, then you can use the web interface and filter for failures. So you would get a quick view on what machines it failed and what tests failed. That would be the way to do it on the server mode.
Okay, a couple of things in there. I want to make sure I don't miss both of them there. So one is that I like the idea that you said there's dependencies marking. So I can tell Autotest that if test A fails, then don't try B and C because both of those are dependent on something that A has to succeed at. I can tell that to Autotest?
Yes. We use that extensively in the KVM test because suppose you want to test guest networking stack inside KVM. To actually test that, you have to make sure the guest got installed. So if the guest installation itself failed, then you won't be able to test the networking for that guest. So yes, that's possible, and we use that extensively.
Okay, and the other thing I was hearing in there is that you're generating like HTML files, but can I hook this up to a more sophisticated system, like something that's automatically a bug tracking system so that I get notifications through the normal mechanisms for my team?
Well, you surely could do that. On the server mode, we actually store those results in a MySQL database. So it would be really trivial to actually add a small bit of code after the test is run to actually parse that and send that to your bug tracker. So we even have a mechanism called a site extension mechanism, which you can write site-something.py, and that code is going to be automatically imported. So you can, it's kind of a plugin kind of system, so you can add your own actions and tweak the working of Autotest in some minor to major ways without having to rewrite stuff.
You know, I just realized earlier in the show I used the word tap because I knew what it meant, and I thought I was just using an example. But we've now used the word about 15 times without defining it. Do you want to be the one to tell us what tap is?
Oh yeah, sure. Tap is the test anything protocol. It's just a definition of an output that's recognized and generated by test suits and by test harness. So if your program, your application, your test code is tap compliant, it's going to output a certain sequence of characters of text denoting that your test succeeded or denoting that it failed and the reason. So if you have a test that outputs tap and you have a harness that can read tap, then you can basically mix and match test harnesses and test themselves because they're talking the same language.
Have you been keeping up with the latest tap specification? I know the new specification allows for things like skipping and blocks of tests and things like that. Is that all implemented in Autotest?
Can you repeat the question? I didn't get it.
Yeah, the TAP has been evolving over time, and I know there's a newer version of the specification, like TAP 2.0 or whatever. I don't actually know the actual version number, so pretend that I didn't say that. But now, as of like the last couple of years or so, you can have things like defining why you skipped particular sections and having subtests that have a block of tests and having roll-ups for that. I'm just wondering if Autotest has kept up with the specification or at least intends to.
Maybe that wasn't quite clear, but Autotest has been outputting TAP for quite some time now. And I'm actually writing, so it's in a kind of experimental way, the TAP parser inside Autotest. So outputting TAP is okay. It's in the main, it's in the upstream. It's mm-hmm. in the upstream repository. But actually the TAP parser, it's being worked out. So we are chasing the latest specification, but we are not feature complete yet.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so but at least it's your intention to actually parse the entire specification then.
Yeah, for sure.
Very good. And I know that there's like TAP output things for things like JavaScript and stuff. So this could be used to test web applications end-to-end then.
In theory, yes. I don't have much experience with testing HTML stuff and JavaScript, but for sure it's software, so Autotest could drive it.
And this is obviously must be what did you do before Autotest with stuff like KVM? I mean, was there like some ad hoc tests that took care of that, and this is now just a great framework to place that all under?
Yes. KVM testing was done with ad hoc scripts and a kind of ad hoc framework. That's usually how things started. They start like simple scripts and they evolve into small frameworks. And Lucas was the guy that actually merged the KVM test to use all the Autotest facilities, all the features that Autotest gives you for free. So it has evolved quite a lot from being some ad hoc testing to being a very capable test inside Autotest. And that has grown, I believe I said it earlier, to actually be able to test other hypervisors. So during the last 6 months or so, we have been also testing things via libvirt. So we are mostly concerned with KVM itself under libvirt and Xen, but in theory, you could hook it up to test anything that libvirt is capable of testing. So that expands quite a lot, the testing scope. And things get really interesting. It wasn't part of the question, but things get really interesting when you're actually hooking up Autotest tests such as networking stacks, such as file systems, and you can test that both inside host and inside guest. So Autotest lets you do that. Suppose you want to test how a file system is performing under the physical machine and under the virtual machine. You can do that in a trivial way with Autotest.
That sounds really, really, really powerful and flexible as well. So, if I wanted to set up Autotest, and I had, you know, I had a server or something, what kind of requirements would there be for me to get it set up and get it running? Sorry, I didn't direct the question very quickly. So, yeah, Kleber, yes. Sorry, go on.
Well, the requirements with regards to machines can be as simple as having a single machine. So most of the time when we're actually developing new tests for the virtualization framework or be it for Autotest itself, we are mostly using our own machines to validate the tests. So the requirement would be nothing else than your own machine. And if you want to actually build a test farm, then you probably want to have a machine that's going to be your server. We'll probably also host your web interface. It also works as the RPC server. And you're going to have machines that can either have pre-installed OS, or we can hook up an installation server such as Cobbler. And we can actually trigger the installation of the host operating system on the test machines themselves, and then automatically after that deploy the test. So you can start with nothing but your own machine running local tests, and you can grow that to having a test farm.
Excellent. So moving back over to Lucas now, you mentioned a test farm there. I was looking at scalability. So this is obviously designed to scale to large amounts of machines. So do you have any idea how big these kind of deployments are? Who's using it in large volume?
Well, it depends. For example, Google uses to run kernel testing in like 5,000 machines. So in terms of scalability, Google was a very good proven ground for Autotest, because they had to take care of a massive amount of machines in their lab premises. So Autotest was designed to handle that pretty well, provided that you use the facilities to split the work. We can use To run the server, we can use auxiliary servers, which we call Autotest drones. So with a central server, it would be harder to do it, because it would have to handle all the communication between the machines. But with drones, you can scale up pretty well. And like I've said, Google has a pretty massive deployment of Autotest machines and an Autotest grid. Our KVM grid that we use on our research and development facilities is much more modest. We have like 6-7 machines running tests every day. So but we could scale that up to thousands of machines.
And how many people are working on Autotest? I mean, obviously you guys there, is there a large team working on this? You mentioned that there are lots of other companies involved as well. So how many people are contributing to it?
Well, I would say we always have, I would say that less than 10 people nowadays, but it varies between 10 and 20 people, and there's always new people coming around and writing patches. Some people leave their leave the effort, like they're going to work in something else, but new guys keep coming. So I would say that for the main the main team is pretty small. This is under 5 people, but if we consider a broader definition of team, we would have something like around 10 people contributing from Google, Red Hat. Well, we used to have folks from Nokia, Secret Labs. Yeah, I don't quite remember every company that has been contributing to us. Fujitsu, what else? So we have the core team is fairly modest, but we have a lot of contributors that contribute on a, let's say, non-regular basis.
And there's lots of different people involved, lots of different companies and so on. So who decides on who kind of dictates the direction that Autotest's going to go in? Do you have votes on that kind of thing, or is it a benevolent dictatorship?
Well, yeah, it's pretty much a benevolent dictator right now. But I try to send emails to everybody interested. Let's say we need to do some major change. I make sure I send emails to every folks of Google who are regularly involved with Autotest. And I send email, hey guys, are you guys okay with it? We can talk about it. And if they don't say anything, I just go ahead and do it. Certainly I'm a very, very nice dictator.
That's good. That's good to know. So you're obviously quite geographically spread out, and I'm curious to know, do you have problems with things like language barriers when you're trying to communicate, and how do you guys all collaborate together, you know, when you're in different parts of the world?
Well, since we use English as the lingua franca of software development, we don't have a lot of trouble, other than mm-hmm. someone speaking a very strong and not usual accent. But other than that, I would say that time zone barriers are much higher usually, because I have a lot of folks on my team working on China. I have a very large QA team working on China, and they contribute to Autotest regularly. Thank you guys. You guys rock. But it's not very frequent that I get to talk to them in person, because when I'm sleeping, they are working, and vice versa. So I would say time zone barriers are the biggest challenge that we face during Autotest development, for example. Mm.
Yeah, and you're using GitHub at the moment to collate everything. So is that, I noticed you moved, didn't you move to GitHub a little while ago from somewhere else? Or have I imagined that?
Yeah, we did. We used to keep Autotest on an SVN repo for a while.
Okay.
And during like 1 year and a half, I was responsible for 98% of the SVN commits. And although I'm proficient with SVN, and I don't really hate it, let's put it this way, I really wanted to move to Git, because it's better, it's easier, it's a more solid concept of version control. For the other folks that work on the KVM team, they are very used to Git. So at some point we have set up a Git mirror on GitHub. Eduardo has helped us to do that. And at some point, I looked at GitHub and I said, okay, well, GitHub looks nice, has a lot of facilities, especially like the every wiki is a repo, is a Git repo. So I have decided to shut down all our facilities on test.kernel.org that hosted the Autotest code base and other Autotest infrastructure services, and I moved it out to GitHub. I even called a meeting with the Google guys in California. So we had a lot of people in this call, and we talked, and we reached this agreement. So yeah, let's move to GitHub. Fine, let's do it.
Mm. And it seems that to me that Git makes a really obvious choice, because of course it's used for Linux kernel development, and it was written by Linus Torvalds for that express purpose. So it kind of feels nice that you guys are in that as well. So what's coming up in the future for Autotest? What's on your kind of, what's on the horizon, and what have you got plans to work on?
Right now, the biggest challenge we are facing is to make Autotest more more friendly to packagers, because people from Fedora are very interested in it. So I have a lot of people from Fedora and other fellow Red Hat engineers wanting to use Autotest. So I am currently Autotest has a single directory design. We designed it this way. Actually, this design came up before I joined the project. When I arrived in the project, it was already like that. And I kind of agree to the design decisions that they took at that moment to keep Autotest in a single self-contained directory. But packagers hate that. And we are doing all the surgery in Autotest necessary to make it to make all the Autodesk entry points installable in a system-wide location. So right now I'm kind of absorbed in that task. We're doing all possible to make sure that Autodesk behaves well on a system-wide install. Then after everything is okay and settled down, I'm going to do a new release of Autodesk. And yeah, we also have a lot of tasks to do on our virtualization testing roadmap, because in parallel with Autodesk itself, I also maintain this large set of virtualization tests, and I have some challenges, especially making the test more attractive to the QEMU developers, because we work very closely with the QEMU community. So we're doing all this surgery in our tests themselves to make them more attractive to the developers themselves, because the QA teams really like KVM Autodesk and use it extensively, but now we need to make it more attractive to this other audience. So yeah, it's packaging after packaging, releasing Autodesk, and there's the other things that we have to do in our virt testing.
Very cool. We're almost out of time, but I just occurred to me one interesting question. To see if you guys are eating your own dog food, how well tested is Autodesk?
Well, right now we have a small test farm, and we do some basic sanity check of Autodesk every time a new commit goes in. Actually, it's not every commit, it's daily testing. And we do things like we go over the code base and run pylint and do some very basic sanity checking on it. Mm-hmm. We could do better on this area, I admit, but we're getting better at that.
Do you have any idea of the test coverage your tests cover for Autodesk?
Well, right now we have a lot of unit tests for the code. Mm-hmm. I would say that the unit test coverage, if I had to estimate, it would be something around 40 to 50% of the core code, the core Autodesk code. The tests themselves could use a lot more unit testing love, but yeah, let's say 40% of the code base, of the core code base, is covered by unit tests, and we make sure we run those unit tests and make sure they always pass, they don't break with new commits. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're not perfect, and sometimes they do break, and we have to fix them, but we try to be very careful and responsible with that.
Very good. That's a great answer, actually. 40% is not bad. I'll give you that. That's actually, I'd say that's 38% more than most people test. So, so I think you're probably in a good space there. It's not bad at all. Well, again, we're going to have to wrap up here pretty quick. So I have to ask a couple of important questions, or all my fans would write me and say, what the heck are you doing not asking your two most important questions? So I'll start with Kleber. First, thank you for being on the show. And I have two quick questions for you. One is, what's your favorite scripting language?
Well, you gotta be kidding me, right?
No, you're taking away without saying.
Actually, yes, Python is indeed my favorite scripting language, and that was before working on Autodesk.
Okay, I'm not going to hold that against you. That's perfectly fine. The next one will decide, though, whether we actually let you go or not. So, VI or apps?
There was some noise. Can you repeat the question?
Favorite text editor, Vim or Emacs or something else?
Oh, it's Emacs, definitely.
Yay! All right, you're forgiven. You're forgiven. That's fine. One on the good side. All right. So, yeah, Kleber, thank you for being on the show. And Lucas, same questions to you.
Mm-hmm.
Same questions.
Go ahead. My favorite scripting language is Python. I love Python. Uh-huh. Favorite text editor, right? Well, I write a lot of stuff on Eclipse, actually, and then Vim. When I alternate between Eclipse and Vim, yeah, that's what I use.
Okay, well, you've done enough contribution on auto test that I think you're forgiven for that one. So I just want to again thank both of you guys for coming on the show and talking to us about auto test. I know this is probably informative for a lot of our audience who hasn't heard about this before. And actually, I could even think of some places here at Media Temple that might take advantage of some of this stuff. So again, thank you guys for both being on the show.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having us on the show.
Very good, very good. Well, that was Lucas Menegal Rodriguez, the chief honcho on the auto test, and Clay Barroza, who has been working with him for a long time, apparently, on mostly on the KVM stuff. Interesting project. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I thought it was really fascinating. I think testing, as you said, is something that people overlook, and that whole 2% test coverage thing is not uncommon. So I think we could all probably do with using things like this to automate our tests a lot more and get more test-led development. I was also interested that you could import a lot of your existing tests, and the whole TAP thing as well. It's very, very useful because, I mean, I've got to admit, before this, I thought a tap over here in the UK is somewhere, something that you turn to make water come out. I believe you put a faucet in, or a faucet in the US. But it sounds really good that they're actually enabling you to pull in your existing tests and build on top of them and automate all of that.
Well, I thought I was going to be way offline by asking about Perl's TAP, but you know, it started with Perl, and it actually really has become a universal standard for the protocol that goes between the test harness and the test fixture. And what's nice about that is it's a pretty strong protocol. I mean, it was actually Larry Wall invented the sort of the predecessor to it back for Perl 3, I think it was. And it was just simply printing out OK1, OK2, OK3, not OK4, and then having something understand that so that it could sort of come up with a summary for it. And over the years, it's developed this thing that's very, very detailed. And that's why I asked also about if they'd kept up with the specifications of the protocol, because now there's things where you can say, I'm deliberately skipping this test, and here's why. And the test harness has to know, you know, in verbose mode, how to print that out so that you have some clue about why it's skipping some of the tests that you asked it to run. So that's only been added in the last, few years now, because I've been around Perl way too long, probably about 10 years ago. I keep saying recent versions of Perl, and I'm talking about 5.8 was released in 2000. So I'm getting old. I'm getting very old, as the beard shows here. So this is a great project. I think I didn't have nearly enough time this morning to review all the details. I sure would have had a lot more interesting questions, but I think we got the basic flow of what AutoTest is about and the scope of how it can be used. I was a bit disappointed that there's not more automated triggering at the end yet. I'm sure that over time they're going to develop that out, because I know that any kind of testing environment ultimately has to let somebody know in some sort of structured way, hey, we blew up here, so make it go to something. But I'm sure they're just working on that. So that sounds really cool. Any other further comments, Dan?
No, I don't think so. It's also good to see, I say no, and then I've just thought of a comment. But, I said no, and then went on to make a comment. But it's good to see that lots of different companies are working on this together, collaboratively, IBM and HP and obviously Red Hat and all the Google, all these people. It's good to see them coming together to kind of tackle this universal problem of testing software that we all need to deal with, really.
Speaking of that 600 people at IBM working on Linux, that was such a shocking number. It was like, I had no idea. You know, when you talked about a little team, I was thinking, 20 people maybe, but 600 people working on Linux at IBM. I had no clue. How's it compared to the employee count of Red Hat? I mean, it's got to be ballpark, right?
I wouldn't think so, yeah. I believe, I'm not as up on the Red Hat employee numbers, but I know Canonical, who make Ubuntu, obviously they're up to about 300-400 now, and I believe they're looking to even get more than that in the next couple of years. They're hiring a lot of people. So it seems to be a growth area, so fingers crossed.
And like you said, I don't want to ask anything, but I'm going to keep talking. It's like when I say something like, before we begin, let me ask this question. Well, haven't we begun then? Yeah. It's a bad turn of phrase, but hey, we're allowed to do that. Okay, so I'm running out of time. I should probably get right on to reading the upcoming guest list. The upcoming guest list is a little short. I have been madly sending out email trying to fill some more slots. I did actually fill a slot, so let's talk about when I get there. So next week we have Sastri Malani talking about Turmeric, which is some sort of enterprise class framework with lots of buzzwords. So we'll have to be interesting to make that an interesting show, but I'm sure it's going to be great. eBay essentially open sourced some of their internal infrastructure code, and apparently it's useful if you're at the level of something big like eBay and need to scale for stuff like that. Following week, though, I'm looking forward to this one entirely. David Mirza, I met him down at FizzLay last year, the big open source conference in Brazil. And he's going to talk about Vega Security Tester, which is a penetration tester program. Basically, you point it at a website, and it uses all the known tricks and tools to try to break into the website to let you know if you've missed anything as you're building and developing your software. So, and it's also pluggable. You can add additional tests that you've also uncovered in your own testing, like somebody broke into your website using a particular strategy. You can actually add that to the suite of tests and share that as part of a community. I'm really looking forward to that. Just added to the schedule. Crystal Hammer, probably not his real name, is going to come in and talk about Stunt Rally. Stunt Rally, we're finally getting a game on again. I love it when we got games on this show because people, it's more fun for people to play with. It's like too much enterprise stuff, I know. But so Stunt Rally is a derivative of VDrive mixed with some other piece of software. I should just go to the webpage and figure it out. But apparently, you build up these paths in three-dimensional space, and then you compete with each other about doing these stunts and stuff, and really high-end graphics, really good-looking stuff. Looking forward to that show. A bunch of other people on the short list. If you go to twit.tv/floss, you can find what's on the list. Also, if you have any suggestions, email them to me, merlin@stonehenge.com. I'm always looking for more people to put on this show. And I'm also hoping that some of the people I've asked are finally going to say yes. So it'll come in. It'll be fine. Let's see what else is on my list here. Follow us on Floss Weekly on both Identica and Twitter. And we also have our new finally live Google Plus page. So if you go to Google Plus and look for Floss Weekly, you can follow us there. And I am posting things, and I'm also making it possible for my co-host to post things when I'm not available. So follow us there. By the way, I talked about my Git video last week. I hadn't got it quite up online yet, but I have a nice two-hour Git video, introduction to Git, that I did here, actually, in the Media Temple building about a month ago for UUASC, the Unix Users Association of Southern California. If you go to just Google for Randall Schwartz Git, I'm sure it's going to show up pretty high on the list. It's already gotten 2,000 views in the four days that it's been up. Here's the link. It's vimeo.com/mtmeetups/introduction-to-git. Just Google. Don't even bother with that. And also, if you're in the Southern California area, we interviewed the guys for SALT about three months ago. This is the highly distributed, type one command in one machine and 1,000 machines respond to it sort of thing, plus some installation stuff to essentially replace Puppet or that. If you're in the Southern California area Thursday night, the UUASC meeting for this month is an interview with one of the chief guys on SALT. So if you're in the area and you want to find out more about that, come on down. Enough of stuff from me. Dan, what are you going to plug today?
I'm actually going to plug something that's got not a lot to do with software or technology, which seems a bit wrong of me, but I'm going to anyway. as some of you will know, you can see, if you're watching the video, that's the wrong hand. You can see there's a guitar just to I'll get this right in a second, a guitar right to my right. And I've got a gig this weekend, so anybody in UK or near to Liverpool, I'm going to be playing with my band, 20 Pound Sounds, at a place called the Zanzibar in Liverpool. If you go to danlynch.org, you can find links there. But also, don't forget, you can always check out Linux Outlaws and Rat Hole Radio and the other podcasts and stuff that we do. We're going to have some coverage from FOSDEM coming up. FOSDEM is the largest free software developers conference in Europe. You get, 5,000-6,000 people, maybe more, going to that one. And my co-host, Fabian, is going to be going over to Brussels for that and catching up with a lot of people. So should be some great interviews coming up, hopefully, as well. So head to sixgun.org if you want to find out more about all of that.
And of course, there's always the Floss Weekly. That's the show, the Linux Outlaws podcast, right?
Yes, yeah, that's what I was mentioning. Yeah, we're going to have some coverage, some Linux Outlaws coverage of FOSDEM.
Okay. I totally blanked on that because I was busy thinking about the fact that the guitar is actually on your left. So you said it's on your right. It's on the right for us.
You're right. The problem is usually it's there, and I've moved it. And now that you've pointed that out, it is actually, yeah, you're right. It's to my left. Yeah. I'm all messed up. It's this whole mirror thing that's going on.
Well, you're from the UK. Yeah. So you drive on the wrong side of the street anyway. So maybe that's part of it.
That's true. We also play guitar on the wrong side.
It's on the passenger side.
That's right? It. Yeah. That's the one.
Okay. It's on the passenger side for you and it's on the passenger side for me. So that's really strange.
It's got a seatbelt on as well. So it's nicely strapped in as, keep it safe.
Okay. Well, Dan, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Glad you could come back and join us for this, especially since we taped it a bit early and my U.S.-based co-host just didn't want to get up this early. So thank you for doing that. But it's pretty late for you. It's like dinner time, right?
Yeah, it's 5:30 in the evening. So I have no objection to getting up at this time. I'm always happy to be up by 5:30 if you need me. 5:30 in the evening, that is, not 5:30 in the morning. A pleasure. Thanks very much, and I'll see you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thank you all for listening and watching, whatever you did to get a hold of this show. And please tell your friends. That's how we get more people to listen and more opportunities to expand the show. So I'm hearing the music come up behind me. You know what that always means. It's time for me to say, we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.